Chapter 1. Career Paths. When it comes to careers, everyone's path is different. Some career elements are easy to be specific about, like where you work, your job title, and total compensation. However, many other important things are harder to measure, such as what working with colleagues is like, opportunities for professional growth, and work-life balance. Career paths are diverse, and there's no simple way to define what a good career path looks like, as this varies from person to person. The best you can do is figure out which career path is interesting and achievable for you. The routes people take into software engineering also vary. There are more common ways, like graduating from university with a computer science-related degree, and there are also self-taught engineers and career switchers. I worked with a colleague who'd been a chemical engineer for 20 years before teaching themselves to code and becoming a developer. In this chapter, we cover career-related topics. 1. Types of tech companies. 2. Typical software engineering career paths. 3. Compensation and company tiers. 4. Cost centers, profit centers. 5. Alternative ways to think about career progress. 1. Types of companies. There's no way to categorize companies definitively, but they do share some common characteristics from the software engineer's point of view. Common types of companies are big tech. Large, publicly traded tech businesses like Apple, Google, Microsoft, and Amazon. These typically employ tens of thousands of software engineers, and their market caps are in the billions of dollars. Big tech engineering jobs are usually the most sought after due to their top-of-the-market compensation, career growth opportunities beyond the staff engineer level, and the chance to do work that impacts hundreds of millions of customers. There could also be the opportunity to work with best-in-class coworkers from across the industry. Medium to large tech companies. Tech-first companies with software engineering at the core of their business. These companies are smaller than big tech and may employ hundreds or thousands of software engineers. Examples include Atlassian, Dropbox, Shopify, Snap, and Uber. These companies tend to offer similar compensation to big tech and career paths beyond staff engineer level. The user bases are usually somewhat smaller, but engineers' work can still impact tens of millions of customers. Scale-ups. Venture-funded, later-stage companies with product-market fits which are investing in growth. These businesses may be making a loss on purpose in order to invest in growing market share. Examples include Airtable, Klarna, and Notion. These places usually move fast under high pressure to grow the business in order to justify a valuation, capitalize on future funding rounds, or prepare to go public. A subset of scale-ups is unicorns, businesses with a private valuation of $1 billion or more. In the 2010s, there were relatively few unicorns, and being one signaled a company might be the next big thing. Today, unicorns are much more common, so being one is less of a differentiator. Startups. Venture-funded companies which have raised smaller rounds of funding and are aiming for a product-market fit. This involves building a product that attracts customer demand. Startups are inherently risky. They often lack meaningful revenue and are dependent on raising new rounds of funding to operate, for which a product-market fit is needed. An example of a successful startup that graduated to a scale-up was Airbnb in 2011. Founded in 2008, the company won seed investment from Y Combinator. By 2010, Airbnb's product had gained traction, and it raised $7.2 million Series A. In 2011, the company raised a $112 million Series B, as investors saw its potential. An example of a startup that didn't make it past the startup stage is Secret, an anonymous sharing app. Founded in 2013, Secret allowed users to share their secrets incognito. The company enjoyed good traction and raised $35 million in funding over 2 years. However, in 2015, it shut down, and part of its funds were returned to investors. Startups tend to offer the most freedom to software engineers, but also the least stability. These companies can also be demanding in work-life balance terms, as their existence depends on achieving a product-market fit before the money runs out. Meanwhile, founders greatly influence the environment of a startup. Some put a work-hard, play-hard culture in place, while others focus on a sustainable working culture. Startups offer the most variety of work, labor force, and growth opportunities. Startups which offer employees equity are high-risk, high-reward places. If the business thrives and eventually exits via a public offering or acquisition, early employees with significant quantities of stock do very well financially. This happened at Airbnb when the company went public with a market cap of $86 billion in 2020, and at home automation startup Nest, which Google acquired for $3.2 billion in 2014. Traditional non-tech companies with tech divisions. These places have a core business with little to do with technology, which is just another division. Some are more than 50 years old and were founded before the software development era. Others are in sectors where technology is not a main source of value. Examples of such companies include IKEA, home furnishing, JP Morgan Chase & Co., financial services, Pfizer, pharmaceutical, Toyota, automotive, and Walmart, retail. Many such companies have embarked on digitalization and aim to make software development more strategic to their businesses. However, the reality is that tech is more of a cost center than a profit center at these places, and these places tend to offer lower compensation than big tech and many scale-ups. On the other hand, traditional companies tend to offer more job stability and a better work-life balance than most tech-first companies. The downside for software engineers is usually fewer career options than in big tech and at scale-ups, and career paths above staff engineer are also rare. Traditional but technology-heavy companies. An interesting subset of more traditional companies are those where technology is central to their offering in the form of hardware, software services, or both. These companies were often standout successes in their early days and are now mature, reliable, and profitable businesses. However, with their age and slowdown in growth comes a more rigid organizational structure that is different from younger technology companies. Examples of such companies include Broadcom, Cisco, Intel, Nokia, Ericsson, Mercedes-Benz, and Saab. Hardware-heavy businesses, as well as automotive ones, can frequently be in this category. These companies are commonly seen as less desirable to work at than big tech or scale-ups. Compensation-wise, they are almost always below big tech and usually don't adopt new ways of working as quickly as younger companies do. At the same time, these companies do offer complex engineering challenges that can be very satisfying to work on as an engineer, and the impact of your work can be at a scale that's more typical of big tech. They're also usually very stable places and tend to offer a more predictable work-life balance than big tech or scale-ups. Also, the tenure of software engineers at such companies can also be surprisingly lengthy, which contributes to a predictability and stability that's much rarer at younger companies. Small, non-venture-funded companies. Bootstrapped companies, family businesses, and lifestyle businesses, which exist for the benefit of the founder's lifestyle, are all examples of smaller companies without venture funding. This means two things. One, no investor pressure to grow at all costs. Two, profitability is required or the business will fail. These characteristics mean such small companies are rarely high growth and are conservative in hiring and their business approach. However, they can be friendly, stable places to work thanks to a comfortable pace of work, profitability, and because many people choose to stay longer at stable companies than at more hectic places. Public sector. There is constant demand for governments to invest in software development, and they do. The upside of public sector jobs is stability, and that compensation is usually clearly communicated and follows a formula. Many positions also have healthy perks in terms of time off and benefits. Downsides may include a slow, bureaucratic approach and the need to support legacy systems, which are hard to change. In some countries, it can also be harder to move from a government job to the private sector. An example of a government organization with a good reputation is the UK's Digital Service Division, which builds and maintains many state websites. It is exemplary in how it works, for example, by publishing much of its work on GitHub at github.com/alphagov. Another public sector organization with a good engineering culture is the British Broadcasting Corporation, BBC. Nonprofits. These exist to serve a public or social cause. Examples include Code.org, Khan Academy, and the Wikimedia Foundation. Nonprofits typically offer less compensation than venture-funded companies, but in return, they have a different mission than generating returns for investors and profits for owners. Working environments vary. Some are excellent places for technologists to work, but tech is usually more of a cost center. Consultancies, outsourcing companies, and developer agencies. So far, we've covered companies that build products and services for which they employ software engineers. However, there is considerable demand for renting software engineering expertise via an agency or outsourcing provider. Outsourcing companies provide as many software engineers as a customer needs, and the customer decides where to allocate the engineering talent within its business. Meanwhile, a consultancy makes contracts with customers to build complex projects end-to-end by providing software engineers who do this work. The consultancy is typically responsible for building and shipping the whole project. Examples of consultancies and outsourcing companies include Accenture, Capgemini, EPAM, Infosys, ThoughtWorks, and Wipro. Developer agencies are usually small to mid-sized companies that take on smaller consulting projects, like building websites, apps, and similar projects for clients. They can also handle service maintenance for customers. Consultant engineers often bill customers at a daily or hourly rate while being full-time employees of the developer agency. The upside for software engineers of consultancies, outsourcing companies, and developer agencies is that they're usually the easiest places to get hired, especially if you're less experienced. This is because these companies often have high demand for talent and offer less compensation than their customers in the other categories. Other upsides are that training for less experienced engineers is often available. There's opportunities to work on a variety of projects and to get a peek into many different workplaces as a contractor. There are downsides to working at consultancies. The most common, career development-wise, these companies usually don't offer paths to above staff engineer level, which is one step above senior engineer. The scope of work is limited to what the customer sets. Consultancies are generally hired for projects that a customer considers to be outside its core competency. Not much focus on good software engineering practices. Clients pay for short-term results, not for a developer to work on long-term things like reducing tech debt. It might be hard to switch to product-focused companies later. Companies that build products like big tech, startups, and scale-ups tend to have very different cultures where maintainability is important, as is taking the initiative. Working at a consultancy for too long can make the switch to these places harder. Academia and research labs. These institutions usually are part of or work closely with universities and work on long-term research projects. Some focus on applied research, while others do basic research. An upside of working in research labs is applying your skills to less explored fields and the stability of being in an environment with fewer to no commercial pressures. Which type of company best fits your career goals? As we see, there are many types of companies and organizations to consider as a software engineer. So, which one fits you best? there's unlikely to be opportunities simultaneously at all 10 types of place. So narrow the list down to realistic options based on your circumstances. It's helpful to talk with friends, family, and people in your network who are engineers, if possible. Get their opinion on whether they like their workplace and what their job is really like. Don't forget, there can be huge differences between companies in the same category, and teams differ significantly in the same workplace. Someone working in a traditional business's tech division on a fantastic team likely has a better time than someone in a struggling team at a big tech giant. 2. Typical software engineering career paths. Career paths for software engineers are pretty simple within a company. The two most common are the single-track and the dual-track career paths. Single-track career path. The single-track career path of an individual contributor, IC, and a manager typically looks like this. For the individual contributor, Level 1, Software Engineer. Level 2, Senior Engineer. Level 3, Staff, Principal, Engineer. For the manager, Level 3, Manager. Level 4, Director. Level 5, VP of Engineering. Level 6, CTO. At smaller and non-tech-first companies, there's a de facto career ceiling for software engineers at level 3, the staff principal level, beyond which growth is only possible by switching to the manager track. One downside of switching paths is that plenty of engineers come to believe management isn't for them, and so they quit to work elsewhere. Meaning an employer loses some of their best engineers who become managers, or who exit the business entirely because they dislike managing. Dual-track career path. Companies where engineering grows to above 30 to 50 people, or which are more forward-thinking, often have a dual-path career ladder to avoid engineers having to choose between being stuck at a level with similar compensation to a line manager or becoming managers themselves. This is what the dual-path approach typically looks like. For the individual contributor, Level 1, Software Engineer. Level 2, Senior Engineer. Level 3, Staff Engineer. Level 4, Senior Staff Engineer. Level 5, Principal Engineer. Level 6, Distinguished Engineer. And Level 7, Fellow. For the manager, Level 3, Manager. Level 4, Director. Level 5, Senior Director. Level 6, VP of Engineering. Level 7, Senior VP of Engineering. And Level 8, CTO. At companies with dual-path career progression, there are a few different approaches. 1. Individual Contributor. Progress from software engineer through senior and to increasingly challenging IC levels. 2. Engineering Manager. Change to an engineering manager from senior or staff engineer, then progress along the management track. With some luck, get to director and above positions. 3. Switch between the IC and manager tracks. Go back to being an engineer after a manager role, and perhaps repeat in future. This approach is more common than you might expect at such companies. All career paths are unique. In reality, many people switch jobs pretty frequently in tech. The majority of software engineers I've known do switch jobs every few years, which changes their career trajectory. This creates varied career paths, which you can see in the LinkedIn profiles of experienced former software engineers. Here are a few examples. The 20-year career path of Tanya Riley, author of the excellent book The Staff Engineer's Path, is pretty linear and has stayed on the software engineer path, starting as systems administrator at Fujitsu Aircom, then software engineer at Google, then senior software engineer at Google, then staff systems engineer at Google, then principal software engineer at Squarespace, then senior principal software engineer at Squarespace. The 20-year career path of Nikki Wrightson, a head of engineering at the time of publishing, stayed on the software engineering path for a long time before moving into leadership, starting as a software developer in a consultancy role, then specialist consultant and developer for telecom companies, then developer for BNP Paribas, JP Morgan, and Morgan Stanley, then six-month sabbatical, then principal engineer, Financial Times, River Island, and Skyscanner, then fractional CTO for venture builder firm Blenheim Chalcott, then head of engineering at Topi. The career path of Mark Zimmelson, director of engineering at WhatsApp at the time of publishing, has varied over three decades, from starting as a software engineer to alternating between being a founder and building stuff and leadership positions. Starting as software engineer, then engineering manager, then founder at a startup later acquired by Akamai, then product manager at Akamai, then founder at a startup later acquired by Sybase, then director of engineering at Yahoo, then entrepreneur in residence at a venture capital firm, then VP of engineering at a startup acquired by Yahoo, then senior director of engineering at Yahoo, then VP of engineering at Syapse, then chief engineering officer at Babylon Health, then director of engineering at Meta. Common career paths. The software engineering industry is dynamic and ever-changing, so it should be little surprise that software engineers have lots of opportunities to shape their careers by taking opportunities that come along. I've observed at least a dozen common career paths. 1. The lifelong software engineer. An engineer who stays a software engineer, becoming increasingly senior. For example, senior engineer, staff, principal engineer, and moving between companies. They often move stacks and broaden their skill set with each new position. 2. The software engineer turned specialist. A developer who comes to specialize in a domain, like native mobile or backend, and stays for an extended time. 3. Generalist-specialist pendulum. An engineer who specializes in a technology and then spends time in a more generalist position. Rinse and repeat. 4. Software engineer specializing in a niche field. For example, a software engineer who transitions to a site reliability engineer or a data engineer, where they do some coding, but the work mostly doesn't resemble software engineering. 5. Software engineer turned contractor or freelancer. Having reached senior engineer status, this person becomes a contractor or freelancer, often earning more and worrying less about internal politics and career development. 6. Software engineer turned tech lead. A developer who starts by leading a team, though not necessarily doing management tasks. Even when they switch jobs, they eventually return to the tech lead position. 7. Software engineer turned engineering manager. A developer who becomes an engineering manager and then progresses on that career path. 8. Software engineer turned founder or business owner. Following a career as a software engineer, this person starts or co-founds a business. 9. Software engineer turned non-software engineer. A person who moves into another tech field like developer relations, DevRel, product management, technical program management, TPM, tech recruitment, or other. Their experience as a software engineer is relevant, and they get to explore fields they've developed an interest in. 10. Software engineer, manager, pendulum. A software engineer who becomes an engineering manager and then returns to being an engineer, often repeating this switch a few times. CTO Charity Majors writes about this increasingly common path in The Engineer-Manager Pendulum. 11. Some combination of the previous 10. For example, a software engineer turned engineering manager, turned product manager, turned founder, or any other combination. 12. A nonlinear career path. For example, a software engineer who becomes an engineering manager, then takes a long career break to have a family or pursue a different career. They return to the field as a director of engineering. Nonlinear career paths develop in ways unique to each person. In this book, we explore a more typical career path within a company, from entry-level engineer to staff plus engineer. However, while such a career path is typical for an IC progressing within a company, it's not necessarily common for software engineers. By detailing the sheer variety of career paths from starting as a software engineer, I hope to show there's not one good career path. Opportunities and preferences vary by person, and you should feel empowered to venture into less conventional areas. 3. Compensation and tiers of companies. It is tricky to quantify every aspect of a job, its professional challenges, flexibility, and work-life balance. One thing that is easier to quantify is total compensation, with the caveat that equity packages in private companies can be tricky to quantify. As a hiring manager, I've observed what seemed like a trimodal distribution of compensation packages, and also confirmed this distribution by analyzing thousands of self-reported data points submitted to techpays.com, a site I built prior to the publication of this book. If you'd like to view a graph of the distribution, please visit engguidebook.com/audiobook. The same role and title can vary in compensation by a factor of 2 to 4 times at different types of companies, the data reveals. A senior engineer at Google is likely to make at least double and potentially even quadruple the total compensation of a senior engineer at a non-tech company or a small family-run business. Total compensation means the combination of 3 values: base salary, cash bonus, and equity. At publicly traded companies, this is liquid, and at privately owned startups and scale-ups, it is illiquid. Let's talk about the 3 tiers of the tech market as they relate to compensation. Tier 1, local market. Companies that benchmark against the local market. Companies in this group are typically local startups, small non-venture funded companies, traditional non-tech companies with tech divisions, public sector, nonprofits, consultancies, outsourcing companies, and developer agencies, and academia and research labs. Tier 2, top of the local market. Companies that aim to pay at the top of the local market to attract and retain standout local talent. Typical companies in this group, some medium-sized tech companies, especially ones that optimize compensation for the local market. Some scale-ups. Some startups, usually those with healthy funding and a regional focus. Some traditional companies with tech divisions, especially those doubling down on tech investment. Tier 3, top of the regional or international market. Companies that aim to pay the best across the region and compete with peer Tier 3 companies, not local rivals. Typical companies in this group, big tech. Most medium-sized tech companies. Well-funded scale-ups which compete for talent with big tech and mid-sized tech companies. Startups with strong funding that hire from the previous groups. Compensation at Tier 3 companies tends to have 3 components. Base salary, equity issued annually, cash bonus issued annually. When publicly traded companies issue stock, it can be sold upon vesting as part of the total compensation package. This is how staff-level software engineers at big tech and similarly large companies earn more in stock compensation annually than their base salary. Many startups and scale-ups also issue equity for software engineers. However, at private companies, this equity is not liquid, and so any stock increase is paper gains only, until the company has an exit like a public offering or is acquired. These exits are how early employees with significant stock holdings make small fortunes, as happened to early Uber employees. Of course, privately traded companies are riskier, because many never achieve an exit. This happened to early Foursquare employees in 2023 when their stock grants simply expired and vanished 14 years after the company was founded. Contractors and freelancers. So far, we've covered full-time total compensation. However, we need to look into compensation for contractors and freelancers, who often do similar work to permanent full-time employees but are paid differently. They bill the company an agreed rate, usually hourly or daily. From the human resources point of view, they're not employees and have a business-to-business contract to provide software engineering services to a client. The terminology varies by country. The US and UK use contractors, while in many European countries they're called freelancers. This book uses contractor. As a contractor, a major contrast to being full-time is that compensation can be significantly higher. The rates senior and above software engineers can charge as contractors almost always place them above Tier 2 compensation packages. Meanwhile, some high-end contractors can earn the equivalent of Tier 3 compensation packages. In some countries, especially in Europe, full-time employment income is heavily taxed, while income from contracting may be less so. From an employer's point of view, the biggest difference between contractors and full-time workers is flexibility. They can recruit contractors quickly and terminate their contracts equally rapidly. Also, there's no need to worry about career progression, training, or severance terms. Vacation is also usually outside the scope of such agreements. When a contractor takes a day off, they don't bill for that day. Performance management and the career ladder are also different for contractors. There are no performance reviews or opportunities for promotion. As a result, there's no need for many of the activities full-time employees do for good performance management outcomes. Plenty of people choose contracting because they don't want more career progression based on internal company levels, and welcome the opportunity to focus more on their work and less on performance management processes and office politics. A downside for contractors is that their job is often less secure than an equivalent permanent role. Full-time employees' jobs are protected by rules and regulations in most countries. But for contractors, the redundancy process is very simple by design. Usually, the employer simply does not extend a fixed-term contract or else serves notice according to a contractual time frame. Contractors are very easy to hire and fire, so tend to be the first team members who are let go when times get tough. However, contractors tend to be comfortable with lower job stability in return for higher compensation. Many are senior or above engineers who are content to not climb the corporate career ladder. Trade-offs between tiers. How do company tiers based on compensation philosophies compare? It's tricky to be objective as each company is different and each working environment has upsides and downsides. Here are some observations about tiers 1, 2, and 3 for full-time employees. Contractors are not covered in detail as there are no assigned levels or promotions to aim for. However, great contractors tend to embody many traits we cover in the senior and staff sections of this book. How hard is it to get a job in each of the tiers? Tier 1, local. This is the easiest tier to get a job in. Tier 2, top of local. More challenging than Tier 1. Tier 3, top of regional. Very challenging to get a job in compared to the previous two tiers. What are the performance expectations between the three tiers? Tier 1, local. Usually pretty reasonable. Tier 2, top of local. Often demanding. Tier 3, top of regional. Almost always demanding. What are the career paths and opportunities as an individual contributor? Tier 1, local. Usually up to senior or staff. Tier 2, top of local. Sometimes beyond staff. Tier 3, top of regional. Almost always beyond staff. How does work-life balance compare between the three tiers? Tier 1, local, can be a focus for the company. Tier 2, top of local, usually less of a focus for a company. Tier 3, top of regional, usually less of a focus. The highest paying companies predictably tend to attract the most candidates for jobs, which means they can, and usually do, place the highest demands upon software engineers. 4. Cost centers, profit centers. Many companies apply the concept of profit centers and cost centers to their business. Which one of these you work in can have implications for your career. A profit center is a team or organization that directly generates revenue for the business. A classic example is the ads organization at Google, which is directly responsible for generating the majority of Google's income. There are many teams that help with this effort. The search team brings visitors to the site and therefore also contributes heavily, for example. But without the ads team building tools for advertisers to spend their ad budgets, Google would make much, much less money. A cost center refers to teams or organizations which do not directly generate revenue, but are still needed for the company to operate smoothly. A good example is an engineering team working on compliance, ensuring the company is GDPR compliant in Europe. Their activities are required, but generate no revenue, and so are cost centers from a business point of view. What are the implications of working at cost centers or profit centers at larger companies? Here are a few. Promotions. These are almost always easier in profit centers. It's easier to sell a promotion case by displaying the impact on revenue generation. An exception is at big tech, where for staff and above positions, solving organization-wide engineering challenges is an expectation on top of organization-wide business impact. Such requirements incentivize experienced engineers to work on platform teams in order to progress their careers. Performance reviews and bonuses. There's usually no difference in working at either type of organization between entry level and up to senior engineering level. At higher levels, those in profit centers frequently get better scores and bonuses. This is because most businesses naturally tilt toward moneymakers when all else is equal in engineers' contributions. Internal transfers. It's understandable if workers want to be in a profit center. However, this is frequently not the case. Many engineers are drawn to complex and interesting work, and that mostly happens on big bet projects, which are not yet profit centers. Conversely, profit centers are often among the more boring teams in an organization, so fewer people want to join. Imagine getting into Meta and choosing a team to work on. Would you rather work on ads infrastructure and increase ad revenue by 0.005%, or a new team building an exciting, innovative way to connect with friends? Attrition. Cost centers almost always have higher turnover as more employees leave the company or transfer to profit centers because career advancement in these teams can be easier. Job security. Cost centers are a prime target for job cuts when a company needs to make cost savings. So how do you know if your team or organization is a profit or cost center? Here are some ways to find out. Does your team or organization report its revenue generated in every period? If so, you're likely in a profit center. How does your company make money, and which organizations bring in revenue? Does sales get all the credit, or is it the front office if you work at a bank? Is tech credited for generating revenue? Which teams within tech get credit? Look at the org chart. How high up is technology represented in the organization? To where does engineering and product report? How many VPs are there in engineering compared to marketing, finance, operations, and other groups? Which teams does the CEO call strategic during all-hands meetings and credit for increasing revenue? Is your team or organization among them? Is your company publicly traded? If so, read quarterly reports for a sense of the corporate focus, which will likely be areas where profit centers are. Software engineering can be a cost or profit center. In big tech, at mid-sized tech companies, and at startups and scale-ups where tech is core to business activities, tech and software engineering are frequently seen as profit centers. At traditional companies and public sector employers, it's common to treat tech as a cost center that's a means to an end. At consultancies and developer agencies, development is what the company provides as a service, meaning this activity is usually a profit center. Working both in cost centers and profit centers gives you perspective. It's easy to feel superior to cost centers when you work in a profit center. However, effective companies need both types of teams and organizations. So it's a useful skill to know how to thrive in each. 5. Alternative ways to think about career progress. Believe it or not, there is much more that matters in your job and career than titles and compensation. Your rank, a company's reputation, and pay are the easiest things to talk about because they're concrete, and compensation numbers offer an easy way to compare positions. Here are some other factors that contribute to how satisfying your job is. People whom you work with and team dynamics. Your manager and your relationship with them. Your position within the team and the company. Company culture. The mission of the company and what it contributes to society. Professional growth opportunities. Your mental and physical health in this environment. Flexibility. Can you work remote or from home? If so, how often and on what notice? On-call. How demanding and stressful is it? Life beyond work. How easy is it to leave work at work? Personal motivations. If you would like to see an illustration visualizing the difference between how many people think about their career versus an alternative way to think about your career, please visit engguidebook.com/audiobook. Weigh the alternative factors you've just heard against the compensation packages of the positions you apply for. It's not uncommon for long-serving professionals to take a pay cut in order to get an upgrade in one or more of these other areas. Find the balance which works for you in your job and in the next one. You will have a much more satisfying career than people who optimize only for easy-to-measure parts of jobs.